Welcome to the Institute for Supply Management's podcast segment. Our goal is to provide you educational tips and resources to help you in your career. New podcasts will be developed throughout the year, focusing on different areas in the supply management field. It's never been easier to learn, perform, and succeed. Enjoy.
Barbara Ardell is Vice President at Paladin Associates. She brings a unique perspective to procurement with her intersecting skills in strategic sourcing, change management, quality, training, and e-sourcing. With over 20 years' experience as a strategic sourcing professional, she spent the early part of her career with Procter & Gamble's world-class purchasing organization, where she sourced a variety of direct and indirect materials and was directly involved in P&G's first ERP implementation. Thomas Case, principal analyst at Spend Matters, has extensive direct experience from both the buy and sell sides of the negotiation table. He has provided consulting or otherwise supported a long line of Fortune 500 organizations and their procurement professionals, and has worked as a solutions advisor and event RFX manager for several solutions providers, including Procuri, currently Ariba, and AEC Soft USA, currently SciQuest.
Hi, Barb. Good morning.
Good morning, Thomas.
Thomas Case here with Spend Matters, and thought I'd take a few moments and talk to you about what you're doing with influencing change and why that makes sense for procurement organizations and strategic sourcing functions in particular.
Well, thanks, Thomas. I appreciate your giving me some time to share my passion with you. Yeah, I'm real excited about the influencing change offering that Paladin has. You know, I worked in procurement at Procter & Gamble for about 20 years, and during that time was involved in a lot of change initiatives and really learned from some of the masters. The OE people at Procter & Gamble were really instrumental in implementing high commitment work systems back in the late 60s in the hardline paper mills. So I've kind of sat at the feet of the masters. But, you know, I've always been a little bit disappointed with change management. It's kind of a love-hate relationship. I love it because I think it's so important, but I hate it because it hasn't delivered the results that I really expected. And that's why I was really excited when I ran into Influencer a few years back, because it really is, in my mind, different from and superior to any change management methodology that I've encountered in my long business career. And as I work with procurement organizations today and through my work at Paladin, we deal with lots of different industries, we deal with lots of different sized companies. And the thing that's really struck me is how much change the procurement organizations are being hit with. And it's everything from reducing savings leakage to procurement transformations to technology implementations to non-traditional spend penetrations. And all of these are very complex change challenges. And oftentimes you see them happening simultaneously. So procurement professionals are really being challenged to drive change, and yet we're not as good at it as we should be, and we need to get better.
Yeah, it's one of those fail-safe questions that no matter how ill-prepared I am, if I walk into some sort of discussion or I meet with someone who is senior level procurement, and all I can just pull out is, okay, so how is this adoption, how is the change management working out for you? And then I can just sit back and listen to them just talk about all their pains and problems.
Well, and that's really what caused me to pursue this offering. We've partnered with a company called Vital Smarts, who are the authors of the New York Times best-selling book, Influencer, because I really appreciated how much better their offering was. And as I've dealt with procurement professionals, we sorely need this help. And actually, I've been interested, the last couple of months, there have been a couple of studies released. One was by Andrew Bartolini at Arden Partners, and he laid out the top three strategies for CPOs and procurement executives, and every single one of those relied heavily on influence skills in order to achieve those strategies. There was also another study that was recently done by the Hackett Group, and it was interesting to note that they said procurement management is no longer recruiting for commodity expertise or procurement process expertise, but they're really looking for people who are excellent at driving change diplomatically. And mm-hmm. I thought that was a really interesting twist. So I think the research is really supporting what I knew in my gut was true, is that procurement professionals really need to get better at influencing change.
So can you give us a specific example of the benefits and the business value of this, how this makes it different?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are really a lot of benefits. You know, the research shows that 85% of organization change efforts fail. 85% fail to meet either quality, cost, or timing goals. I mean, that's huge when you think about that. Another statistic that I saw said that 98% of CFOs believe that stakeholder engagement and change management are really critical skills for procurement. So think of that, CFOs, so those are either our bosses or our bosses' bosses, mm-hmm. 98% of them think that those are critical skills, and yet only 60% of them say that they have confidence in procurement's ability to execute against those goals. And that was a Proxima Nelson Hall study. So we really have a need and an opportunity to improve. I actually did a non-scientific survey at three of the conferences that we attended this spring, and we asked the people that stopped by the Paladin booth, what is your biggest change challenge at work? And we weren't really surprised by the answers we got. It was some of the things that I mentioned earlier around savings leakage and procurement transformation, et cetera. But what was interesting was the second question we asked them is, what do you estimate is your probability of success in conquering that change challenge? And the answer, average answer, was 63%. So when you think about it, those folks are saying that they expect to fail almost 40% of the time.
Yep.
So what's the cost? You know, the cost is the vanishing ROI. So that business case that I put together is no longer valid because the change didn't happen. It's the lost opportunity cost. It's the project I didn't work on when I worked on the one that failed. It's the discouraged and frustrated employees who are now much less productive because they're discouraged and frustrated, or the regretted turnover that comes from being discouraged and frustrated. But the last one, which I think is huge, is what I call organization cynicism. Mm. So if you have an organization where projects fail time after time after time after time, and I've seen organizations like this, and you probably have too, that pretty soon when change comes down the pike, people dig their heels in, they fly under the radar, and they say, this too shall pass if I just sit tight. And so the change never happens, and the organization stagnates, and I think that's the worst. So, you know, W. Edwards Deming of Total Quality fame would say these are costs unknown and unknowable.
Yep. Yeah, the cynicism there, the Dilbert effect, right?
Absolutely.
You've seen it before, it's probably going to come around again, so let's just try to avoid it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And you had asked, so what's different? And, you know, I get that question a lot from people. It's like, oh, we do change management. And it's like, yeah, I know. I've done change management for a long time, too. So what's different? And there really are some key differences with Influencer, which is why I was really drawn to it. First of all, it is very, very research-based, which I love. It's actually so research-based. It was chosen in 2009 by MIT Sloan Management as Change Management Product of the Year. And you know those folks at MIT are data-based. But what the folks at Vital Smarts did is they reviewed 50 years of social science research. They studied 17,000 journal articles. But most importantly, they studied influencers who had succeeded and had the data to prove it. So it's very, very research-based. So that's one thing that's different. The second thing that's different is that it focuses on changing individual behavior. Because when you think about it, organization change is really just the sum of individual behavior changes. And so it really zeroes in on changing those individual behaviors. And if you think of traditional change management, think of traditional change management as really tackling the tip of the iceberg. And it has a very project management focus. It goes after things like system strategies, processes, and structure. And while all of those things are important, they're not sufficient. And if, again, the iceberg analogy, what's below the waterline, and we know that's what kills us, right? Ask the Titanic. What's below the waterline are all of the status quo behaviors that really undermine your change. And that's really where the influencer methodology focuses, is on targeting those behaviors that really hold back your change. The third thing that's different is that it focuses on vital behaviors. Now, not all behaviors are vital. And I know when I've done change efforts in the past, and I've seen others, that you try to cover all of your bases and you try to do everything. And, you know, one could argue, well, I'm just being diligent. Well, the truth is I'm diluting my effort. By trying to go after everything, I do nothing well. And the influencer methodology leads you to focus in on what they call vital behaviors. And these are the high leverage actions, the tipping points, if you will. And if you can influence those few vital behaviors, then the rest of the change will come along.
Yep.
And then it also causes you to look at diagnosing the underlying causes of resistance. So rather than treating symptoms, you're getting at underlying causes, which makes your change effort more effective and more sustainable. And finally, the final differentiator is that it uses what they call the six sources of influence. Most change initiatives go after maybe one or two sources of influence. And what happens is you underwhelm an overwhelming challenge. And Vital Smarts research has proven that if you use four or more sources of influence against a vital behavior, you increase your chances of success tenfold.
Well, I mean, having gone through a portion of the training exercise and sit through the activities with you there back in Atlanta, my takeaway or my observation was that even if you have carefully mapped out your best practice processes and steps, ultimately within those boxes in the grid, you have humans doing things. And how they do these things, you can rub people the wrong way, or you can do it the right way, or you can, you know, choose to perform quite differently in those different steps, which would hugely affect the outcome, no matter how good of a process you have on paper. And me, I'm a bit HR allergic, so if it gets too touchy-feely, kind of, you know, that you know what I mean with that, those HR activities, right? That then I kind of shrink away from that and I don't really enjoy that. But I do like organizational behavior and how people work in groups. I found that interesting in business school and how that whole thing plays out. And I can see how this creates, kind of breaks through this normal, I'm just going through A, B, C, D, E, those steps and I'm done, but it makes you think through, why am I doing this and is it actually working, and who, when I'm working with this person for this next step, is it actually, where do things go right and where do they go wrong, right? So it's more of a systematic, as you say, scientific approach around it. So it's, without getting overly into the HR aspect of it, you start to work more efficiently and effectively as a person in that process.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. You know, life would be so much less complicated if it weren't for those people, right? Those humans that cause all the complications in our life. Unfortunately, we're all a necessary evil in this whole process, and so it is important that we consider the human factors, and certainly the influencer methodology does that. I was working with a client, actually a CPO at a nonprofit, and he said to me one of the things he really appreciated about the influencer methodology is it gave them a framework, a structure that really helped them to be much more robust in their planning process. And the people on his project team really agreed with that. They said that it really helped them to focus on the people that were being impacted by the change. And now one of the side benefits that this particular client, we took their entire project team through our 3-day workshop, and the team actually said also that it really helped to improve the communication among their team members and made them much more effective in working together. And then they had a common language, a common framework to be able to discuss how they were going to be approaching the change. So they found it very beneficial to them in working through their change challenge, which was a huge e-procurement implementation.
Yep. Yeah, speaking of implementations there, I know that you have changed the Vital Smarts more generic approach and turned it into something that is far more tailored at supply chain and procurement specifically. And I see from the quotes that you have that the CPOs and the others, they find it quite beneficial, quite effective.
Yeah, we've really built on top of the influencer methodology. That's our foundation, and we've built on top of and around it, you might say. We actually have a couple of different approaches that we use. You know, certainly we can do the standard influencer training, which we've, I'll call it procurementized. Mm-hmm. So using examples and terminology, of course, that procurement professionals can relate to. My preference in terms of approach, because I think it's the most effective, is to take an intact project team through a three-day workshop where they actually put together their change management plan during the workshop. And the reason that's my favorite approach is because, you know, learners learn best when they're able to apply their learning immediately to something that's important to them. And so you have a project team charged with a specific change initiative. They're going to learn that methodology, apply it immediately, and it's going to stick with them because it's something that's important to them. So that's my favorite approach. We've also done sort of the standard training, but done it with an intact project team. So it's kind of a workshop light, if you will, for folks who may not have the time to do the longer engagement. And I think that's a great second best, if you will, because it, again, allows them some time for application.
How about on the direct side, let's say procurement on the business unit level, where you're working more with strategic relationships, where you have ongoing, quite heavy, at least compared to corporate procurement, interaction, collaboration, always a lot of touch points with those suppliers almost daily. Have you seen any use of this at that level?
You know, the methodology, Thomas, is really agnostic.
Yeah.
You know, so it really doesn't matter what the change is. You know, this works in procurement, it works in finance, it works in marketing, it works on a procurement transformation, it works on an e-procurement implementation, but it also works on an organization that's trying to get more effective at influencing stakeholders or influencing upper management, because those are some of the change challenges we've heard procurement people express. So it really doesn't matter what the change challenge is. What you do is you define the result that you want to get, and then as part of the training or the workshop, we look at what are the vital behaviors that need to change. The group identifies those vital behaviors and then develops the six or strategies in order to influence those behaviors.
So if I am company X here thinking that this is interesting, I mean, what do I have to do here to do this and sort of make it stick so that it doesn't become yet the other flavor of the month and let's duck in, this will also one go away and I can go back to my old ways?
Yeah, boy, I really appreciate that question. You know, I did training professionally for a number of years, and it was one of my disappointments is the lack of stickiness, if you will, of training. You know, there are some statistics that say people remember only 10% of what they learn in training. You know, I know every word I say is a pearl of wisdom, so I was terribly disappointed at that statistic. But, you know, I think the key is, as I said earlier, that if you can bring together a critical mass, so whether that's a critical mass from your procurement organization or a project team, and have them work together so they learn the methodology together, they can support one another in the use of the methodology. A project team is ideal if you can bring a project team together so that they can work through their change strategy together. That's really the best situation. So teaching the skills and the methodology and having them apply it immediately to something that really matters to them, that's the best way to do it.
So if you were, let's say, the CPO here then in doing this, what other advice would you give yourself if you want to set out on this course?
Call me. that's the only answer I can think of. There's a lot more to say. You know, we haven't really gotten into the six sources of influence yet, which are really key to the whole methodology. And if I could just spend a couple of minutes on that, the six sources of influence, if you could think of a 2x3 matrix. In a 2x3 matrix, the columns are motivation and ability. So for any change to take place, people have to be motivated to change, and they have to have the ability to change. And then the model looks at motivation and ability from three different focuses. And the first focus is personal. So people have to be personally motivated to change, and they have to have the personal ability to be able to make that change. The second row, if you will, is social. So how do social forces affect motivation and how do social forces affect ability. So things like peer pressure, you know, and how do others either enable or disable me from being able to implement a change. And then the third row is what we call structural. These are the environmental factors that affect motivation and affectability. And the research has shown that most change initiatives maybe employ one or two sources of influence against a vital behavior. And it's just not enough to conquer a very complex change challenge. But if you can deliberately strategize using all six sources of influence against your targeted vital behavior, again, you can increase your chances of success tenfold.
In a way, it's a little surprising that procurement hasn't adopted something along these lines long ago. I mean, if I think to all the sales training activities I've been through in the past, you know, how you segment and analyze your target, so to speak, right? And you kind of break it down in the various areas of influence when it comes to decision-making, which you ultimately try to influence, right? So other areas have maybe adopted this a bit sooner.
Well, you know, I think a lot of the larger procurement organizations in particular have been doing change management. Mm-hmm. I was actually talking to a Fortune 50 company not long ago and was told all of our band 3 procurement people have been trained in a change management methodology, but nobody's using it because it's too complex. Or I see companies using very traditional change management methodologies, and they just aren't terribly effective, and so people aren't using them as much as they could or they should, or they're using them and they're just not getting the results that they want or they need. And so there's definitely room for improvement, and I think the influencer methodology is kind of the answer to that challenge of there's got to be a better way. I think it's the
I can see from the solution providers, the technology providers that I talk to, that they try to incorporate, you know, some of these things in their solutions and enhance collaboration, for example, right? But so where would you say that this fits in the maturity progress as a sourcing organization tries to go from very reactive, tactical, low level to become more of that orchestrating, leading, you know, controlling its own destiny sort of an organization? How do you think this fits in there?
Well, it's an enabler. It's a tool, if you will. You know, in order to reduce savings leakage or bring greater spend under management or implement technologies, you've got to influence change. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have an effective way of doing that, you're not going to be able to move up on the maturity curve. So it's really an important enabler for organizations who are trying to become more mature. And, you know, recall that statistic I gave you earlier, 98% of CFOs believe that influence skills are important for procurement, and yet 60% have confidence in our ability to influence change. And that's not a very rousing recommendation from our bosses or our bosses' bosses. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely an opportunity for the procurement leaders of today and tomorrow to improve their skills in influencing change and to get better results.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you consider that at least nominally, all the participants in this equation, they're playing for the same team. They're supposed to be playing towards the same goal, strategy, and all that. Yet, it's more or less just a coin toss whether or not you're going to succeed. That's really what you're saying there. So it's if it were a more adversarial situation, right, where it was truly a harder goal to attain, you could see percentages that would be rather low then, right? But in this case,
by their own vote, yeah. The end scientific survey that we ran, people estimate they're going to fail close to 40% of the time.
Yeah.
40% of the time you're going to fail to meet quality, cost, or timing goals. And that's pretty abominable when you think about the costs associated with that.
Yeah. And because you are working off goals that are measurable and you have had a plan and you have presumably talked to the stakeholders and you've probably done your homework and all that, still failing that often is a
few examples. I mentioned I'm working with a client on a procurement transformation. Mm-hmm. They've got to move from a P-CARB to an e-procurement solution. They've got to influence 10,000 field staff, which includes volunteers. And of course, influencing volunteers adds a completely different wrinkle to the whole thing. If the volunteers aren't happy, you know what they're going to do? They're going to walk. They're going to quit. And that leaves this organization up a creek. When you look at savings leakage, I think Aberdeen's got a statistic from 2010, if I'm not mistaken, that says that you can attribute about 40% to savings leakage, savings identified but not realized. And I worked on an e-sourcing event with a client a while back, and they had identified a multi-million dollar savings opportunity that went completely unrealized because they couldn't convince the using locations to implement the recommendation. Yep. Technology adoption. I worked with a client on an e-sourcing implementation in 2003 timeframe, I think it was. I got to work with them again in 2012 because the implementation didn't stick. Yeah. And so think of the lost subscription dollars, but more importantly, think about the savings that weren't realized and the efficiencies that weren't gained as a result of poor adoption of their e-sourcing solution.
Yeah, no, it's sad, those the metrics, sourced but not realized savings, right? It's the solution providers that tout their statistics, it's kind of over the years, you've gotten to the point where, well, how much was actually realized is always the comeback when they talk about how much their savings were.
Yeah.
So they, instead of fixing the issue, many companies seem to learn to live with just not realizing what they worked so hard and negotiated to attain, and then they just leave it on the table.
Well, a lot of companies will say we're no worse than anybody else, but I'm
yeah.
not sure that that's a great thing yeah. to brag about, right?
Exactly. So.
And you can gain a competitive advantage if, you know, you're no worse than anybody else. Well, what if you're better than somebody
exactly.
else?
Yep.
You leave them in the dust, and
yep.
Your organization benefits yep. as a result of that.
Yeah, and it's hard to see how you can move up that maturity curve without doing something to fundamentally change the way people go about doing their business, not just implementing yet another slick process, but there's more needed.
Well, and certainly in my 20 plus years as a procurement practitioner, I always felt that I did a whole lot more selling than I did buying. In
yep.
other words, I did a whole lot more of influencing both within the organization as well as with suppliers. And so certainly as a procurement professional, improving your influence skills will definitely pay dividends to you, both personally and professionally.
Yeah, no, I hear that at the conferences I attend too, that the skills sought after when they talk about the talent shortage and all that, they always bring up, we need people who can sell internally to stakeholders and get that buy-in, influencing change effectively.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Interesting, thanks Barb.
Thanks for the opportunity, Thomas. Nice to see you again.
Thank you for joining us for another podcast session. Additional podcasts will be released throughout the year. For more information on the Institute for Supply Management, please visit our website at www.ism.ws.